Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta. Susan Orlean is an author and a staff writer for The New Yorker. Her latest book is called The Library Book. It's an intoxicating mixture of true crime, history, biography, and immersion journalism. Her book tells the story of the most devastating library fire in American history. It happened in Los Angeles on April 28, 1986. The fire burned for more than 7 hours and destroyed 400,000 books. Susan found out about this story accidentally while being given a tour of the Los Angeles Central Library.
As we were walking through the building, the gentleman giving me the tour pulled a book off the shelf, took a deep whiff of the book. I didn't really understand what he was doing. And he, after a moment, said, "Well, you can still smell the smoke in some of them." I thought he meant that they allowed people to smoke in the library. I really had no clue about anything that would be referring to a fire.
Yeah.
And he said, no, from the fire, the big fire. And I said, what fire? And yeah. He said, well, the big fire in 1986 that shut the library down for 7 years. I was absolutely astonished that I had never heard about this. And that was a big reason that I was drawn to the story, because I'm very curious about events that seem significant that somehow have missed being noticed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, I get very drawn to stories like that, and I was really baffled. I could not believe that I had never heard about this.
Yeah.
And the more I learned about it, the more I was amazed, because I didn't know when he first mentioned it that it was the single biggest library fire in American history, nor did I know that at that point it had been the largest structural fire in Los Angeles.
Mm. So tell me a bit about the fire. What exactly happened?
A fire alarm went off in the morning of a normal work day, and the library was open. There were about 200 patrons inside already and about 200 staff. When the fire alarm went off, nobody was especially concerned because they had a lot of false alarms. The building was in bad shape. The fire alarm system was very touchy. So people thought, oh, God, here goes another false alarm. They evacuated the building. The fire department showed up, looked around, didn't see a fire, couldn't reset the alarm, thought they better look again, and found a little tiny sort of tendril of smoke in the fiction stacks. Very quickly, it exploded into an enormous fire that ended up reaching 2,500 degrees.
Wow.
It burned for 7.5 hours, just fierce, fierce fire that was burning in the stacks of the library, which are almost like big chimneys that are lined with books. So you can imagine the absolute devastation of this fire. It got so hot that a few of the firefighters said to me that the flame became colorless. It wasn't red, it wasn't orange, it wasn't blue, it was just clear.
Transparent, kind of.
Just,
wow.
And they said it was really terrifying. When it was finally put out after 7.5 hours and just about every single piece of firefighting equipment in the city of L.A., in the ruins, they found 400,000 books were totally destroyed.
Oh dear.
And 700,000 were badly damaged. More than half of the entire contents of the library had been affected. The building was relatively intact. I mean, certainly it was filthy from smoke and lots of concrete crack and spalling and so forth, but the real damage was to the contents. And there was a sense that the library may never recover from it. Mm. Luckily, that proved not to be the case, but it was a struggle.
Yeah. Besides all this structural damage that you just talked about, it did a lot of psychic damage to the people who worked there.
It was really devastating. The librarians were traumatized. Librarians work diligently to build their collections. It's not just that they click on the bestseller list and order those books. They're developing collections that they feel are really interesting and comprehensive and relevant to their patrons. For them, seeing their work up in smoke, literally, because of the fact that they developed these collections, the fact that they had no idea what was going to happen, if the library would ever reopen, their concern about what was going to happen to their patrons, the people who use the library, they were really traumatized.
Yeah. Investigators started to suspect arson, and the prime suspect was this guy named Harry Peake. Can you tell me a bit about him?
Harry Peake was a young man who grew up outside of L.A. with big dreams. He was handsome and charming, and everybody liked him. He was just that kind of guy. He was also a compulsive liar. And he lied about silly things. He lied always just to make his life seem more glamorous than it really was. He decided, like lots of handsome, charming young men, particularly those who live near L.A., that he wanted to be a movie star. He moved to Los Angeles when he was in his early 20s with no plan, except somehow he saw himself becoming a star. It's not clear to me whether he actually thought, okay, there are steps you take for achieving this. He was parking cars. He was working, you know, odd jobs, but somehow imagining that the fairy dust of Hollywood would be sprinkled on him and one day he'd wake up and he'd be a star. And he was always telling his family that he had become good friends with different celebrities.
Burt Reynolds and Cher.
But the thing about him is that he lied about everything, but never in a way to harm anyone. It was innocuous, silly lies, but he was a liar.
Yeah, and even when he was interviewed repeatedly by the police and investigators, he would change his story.
Constantly. Yeah.
I think we can agree that Harry Peake belongs in the Unreliable Narrators Hall of Fame.
Oh, my God. He may be the most unreliable narrator. I have never heard of an instance where someone provided so many different alibis.
Exactly, yeah. You decided to burn a book. Why?
For two reasons. One was, I was going to write a description of the library burning, and I realized I had never seen a book burn, and I had no idea how to describe it. But the prevailing reason was I was very curious about our relationship to books and libraries and why they feel almost sacred and why there is such a taboo about not only burning a book, even throwing a book away. I realized that I couldn't remember ever throwing a book away, including books that were literally falling apart. I just found it so uncomfortable, as if it were a living thing. Burning a book seemed like such a taboo that I thought, I'm very curious to see, can I even do this? It almost felt illegal.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's not. It's just...
Should be, though.
I think it should be.
Yeah, exactly. What book did you decide to burn?
Well, that was a tough one.
Yeah.
And I first thought I could burn a book that I didn't like, and then I thought, no, that seems horrible. It seemed much more kind of harsh. So I thought, well, I'll just burn a book I really like. And then I thought, well, I can't burn a book I like. That would be terrible.
Even tougher in a way, yeah.
I thought, well, maybe I'll burn one of my own books.
No, I thought, can't do that. No way. And
I also thought that's even not fair because I have lots of copies of my books. I thought also that there's something really weird about the idea of burning my own book.
Yeah.
And I really couldn't decide, so I thought, maybe I can't do this. Maybe I just can't. One day, my husband came home, and he was just grinning ear to ear, and he handed me a copy of Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury.
Perfect.
And said, here you go.
Yeah. Celsius 232.778, as we call it in my home and native land of Canada. Because we have the metric system.
Is that true?
No.
Is it really?
No. It's funny.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I really did feel that it was the perfect book to burn. And Ray Bradbury would have appreciated it.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
There was also additional resonance because Ray Bradbury spent so much of his life in the L.A. Public Library and loved it so dearly and had been very involved in the huge fundraising effort to replace the books that were damaged in the fire. Ray Bradbury became a bit of a spirit animal for me in the book, partly because of, well, his association with the library itself being so meaningful. In fact, the intersection of the streets in front of the library are now called Ray Bradbury Corner.
Oh, cool. We got to get an Orlean Avenue there down
yeah,
by the library.
That, I know.
That'll come. We'll make that
come
happen.
On.
It'll happen. Just give
Please.
It time. Please. Yeah, so tell me about burning the book. How did it go?
Well, I was very nervous because I was in L.A. and I thought burning anything in L.A. is a very risky undertaking. So I went to my backyard and I took an aluminum cookie sheet, which I thought would be a safe kind of base to burn this book on. I had my husband come out with me with a bunch of buckets of water. I was really nervous.
Oh, yeah.
And I was nervous to do it and uncomfortable doing it and really hesitated to the very last minute and finally lit a match, held it to the very corner of the cover, and it was slow in the beginning. It was just a little trickle of smoke and a little edge of orange, and then suddenly the book literally was gone. It was almost as if it had exploded. It,
really?
It
wow.
burned so fast. Hmm. It was a paperback. But there was nothing left that you would have been able to identify as a book.
Wow.
It burned that quickly.
Wow.
And it gave me a better understanding of how the fire in the library became so fierce. Books are perfect fuel.
Yeah.
And particularly when they're in what is essentially a chimney.
Yeah. How did you feel? What kind of feeling after you burned it?
I was kind of, I felt like I had gone bungee jumping. You know, it was something where I was so nervous and uncomfortable that when I finally did it, it was almost a sense of exhilaration.
You talk about in the book, you came across this Senegalese idiom that when someone dies, their library burns down, and that led you to come up with this idea that the analog of a brain and a library is precise and exact, and you have this great phrase, libraries are our collective brain.
And I really believe that. In fact, I began feeling that even the way a library looks with these rows and rows of books, that it in some way seemed to replicate my sense of a brain as these rows and rows of vignettes and information and knowledge. I've never looked deep inside a human brain, but
there's still time, though. You might do it, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, that could be my next book.
Yeah.
But even the way that a library organizes books in a way that feels almost like the way thought travels. It's not always so immediately obvious how one book relates to the next and the next when you're looking on a bookshelf. Similarly, the way we organize thoughts in our mind. And I really fell deep in the spell of that Senegalese expression because it was both in the particular of watching my mother lose her memories and realizing how we contain these volumes of our lives, knowledge, and experience, and how libraries really do replicate that. It really struck me as being one of the reasons maybe that we feel so deeply connected to libraries.
I think it's fair to say that you have your own distinctive style, which we could call Orleanian or Orleanesque, if you prefer. How would you describe the Orleanian or Orleanesque style?
Ooh, that's a good question. Wow. Well, I like really clean writing. I like to sneak up on people. I like writing that surprises you, that feels comfortable, that feels as if I'm talking to you directly, but that surprises you at regular intervals where you go, oh, wow, or, well, I didn't know that, or, oh, that's a word.
Juddering was a perfect example for me. I love that word you used on page 216, I think, juddering. I think that would be a great title for a horror novel or a movie. Juddering.
Yeah, actually, I love that. Yeah. And whether it's a surprise in the pace or the word choice or the information, I like that experience for the reader. I'm very interested in the rhythm of my writing.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The hope that it moves you in a propulsive way and has these peaks and quiet moments.
Yeah, ups and downs. And it does, yeah. And it's very intimate, too. You have this very intimate tone.
Oh, well, that's what I'm very much trying to achieve.
Well, you are achieving it. You're succeeding.
Well, thank you. That's a huge compliment because I would love to feel that I don't have time to come tell you the story of the LA fire, but I'll write it down and it should feel as if I was able to say, sit down, do you have a couple hours? Let me tell you this amazing story.
That's what it feels like. That's what reading your books feels like.
And how that's achieved, I'm not sure, but certainly writing with that in mind as my goal informs the way I write.
Susan Orlean is the author of The Library Book. To this day, we still don't know the actual cause of the Los Angeles Library fire. You can find out more about Susan at wpr.org/beta.
One thing that Reddit learned and kind of taught the rest of the internet over that next decade was that the voice of simply an endorsement from a community member is very valuable.
Up next, journalist Christine Ligorio-Chafkin introduces us to Reddit, the website that calls itself the front page of the internet. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.